You are listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast, a show for women who are chasing their everyday and epic adventures. This podcast is hosted by Christy Moan and me, Katherine Taylor, and powered by Feisty Media. Okay, we're back in the kitchen.
Do you hear the sizzle, sizzle?
You gotta wash your hands.
I need to wash my hands. Sorry. Okay.
Talk about alive and in person.
Can you smell it? The kitchen smells so good.
Christy's making butternut squash soup for lunch today. Yeah. I just got back from a ride with the group for our second week of gravel camp. It's not even 9 a.m. Christy's making butternut squash soup.
Homemade cookies. Yeah. It's a good one.
I'm just drinking coffee. You're standing drinking in coffee, the kitchen.
Watching me work.
Watching you work.
This is how this works, folks.
This is how it works. I was not allowed in the kitchen.
Yeah, you were not allowed in the kitchen.
As for call. I think I'm not allowed in the bike stuff either. So I know my place.
Catherine's just here to look pretty and tell people what to do.
Exactly.
And it works great
perfect.
For
her. Yeah. Are you sick of me yet? We've been together a long time.
We've been together a little bit. I'm not sick of you, but I am, like, seriously. I already said this on the last intro. I'm ready to see my dog and my husband.
I know. I'm ready to see my dog, too. Yep. And my parents are ready for me to see my dog.
Amazing.
If you hear background noise, guys, that's Christy putting carrots.
Roasted carrots in for the butternut.
For the butternut squash soup. Yeah. Interesting.
It's going to be yummy.
I haven't seen this recipe before. Well, we won't talk to you through the kitchen too much. This is an interview we recorded a few weeks ago. It's with one of the Lifetime Grand Prix athletes, Caroline Torrey. And she's really interesting because she has a really cool job outside of riding her bike.
Yep. She has a great job. She's a great human. And I mean, so like, that's kind of the theme for the women in the Lifetime Grand Prix. We get to listen to Caroline Torrey and learn a little bit more about her.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to let you get back to cooking, and we're going to get on to this week's episode with Caroline Torrey. If you are looking to buy or sell a bike, I have got a great deal for you. We have partnered with Bycycle, which is spelled B-U-Y-C-Y-C-L-E, and you can find them at bycycle.com. They have over 20,000 pre-owned and refurbished road, gravel, mountain, and triathlon bikes available. It's a global marketplace, so you're going to find bikes from all over the world, from very low-level entry price to very high top-end bikes. And right now, you're going to be able to save $100 on your purchase if you use Girls Gone Gravel at checkout. The other exciting thing is they make it really easy if you're trying to sell a bike. I know that we're all a little sketchy about listing something on Facebook Marketplace, and are we going to meet somebody in a weird parking lot, and are they going to try to scam us? This makes it super easy. You just go on, you create an account, you're going to put the make, model, and year of your bike, and it's going to upload all the information about components, everything on your bike, take a few good pictures, list it, and then when your bike sells, they're going to send a box to your house and arrange for pickup. It's very easy, a great place to find bikes, so head on over to bycycle.com, use that code GIRLSGONEGRAVEL for $100 off your purchase. If you have a big ride on your radar, whether it's a race, a big training day, or an epic adventure, you need to plan for your fueling and hydration. So that's why we're excited that Precision Fuel and Hydration has come on as a partner of the podcast. You can use their free fuel and hydration planner to get a personalized strategy for your next big ride, including advice on how much carbohydrate, sodium, and fluid you need to perform your best. They also have a range of gels, chews, and drinks to make it really easy to hit those numbers. Plus, and this is a big deal, y'all, you can book a free video consultation to discuss your race nutrition plan and get your questions answered by a member of their friendly and experienced athlete support crew. They also have a ton of articles and videos in their Knowledge Hub, including information and pieces on the nuances of fueling and hydration for female athletes. So go check that out if you're trying to dial in your approach to nutrition. You get 15% off of your first order of fuel and electrolytes with Precision Fuel and Hydration. Simply use the code GGG15 when checking out at pfandh.com. So that's pfandh.com. Okay, I have confidence in my name pronouncing abilities today because
You
we
do.
just had a long conversation with today's guest, Carolyn Torrey.
Yay, Carolyn's here. Good start.
It's a good start. It's kind of the joke because I really butcher everybody's names. But I asked right before we went to record because you have the LINE, so I would have totally butchered it. So.
Yeah, it's very confusing. I don't know why my parents did it to me, but yeah.
That's
They just
what I
wanted
was
to
asking.
remind you. Like, it's a constant reminder.
Yeah.
How much they
Yeah.
love you.
Exactly. I love
Mm-hmm.
that. And you were just telling us that your family's from Canada. Are you originally Canadian then?
Yes, I was born and raised in Toronto. But I've actually been in the US now longer than I ever lived in Canada. I lived in Toronto through ninth grade, and then I ended up doing my last 3 years of high school in New Hampshire, going to college in Maine, and then making my way to Colorado. So, yeah,
You
but most of
probably
my
can't.
family's still in Canada.
Okay. Well,
Yeah.
we'll
And
count you as an American now. Cool. Well, we always start. We like to ask everybody, tell us your story about how you got on the bike. What was your journey there?
yeah, so grew up in Toronto, which is not a big outdoor mecca. It's a big city. So I was really lucky that my parents were pretty avid recreational cyclists and skiers and were good about getting us out of the city and on bikes and skis and kind of developed an early appreciation for nature and adventure and being outside all day, despite living in downtown Toronto. And that really, I think, sparked the dream of trying to move to Colorado and live in a mountain town, which I made happen after college. But I would not have called myself a cyclist growing up. I did no competitive biking. I owned bikes here and there, but it was always just as a way to get around or have fun outside. So I really didn't start any competitive cycling until I moved to Colorado. And even then, it took me a few years of solo mountain bike rides and questioning my abilities before I felt confident enough to even ride with other people, let alone do a bike race. But then, yeah, so I think I did my first mountain bike race when I was probably 28. So really late to the game, and started doing a lot of the local race series events here in Aspen. They have alternating road and mountain bike races every Wednesday night. So that was my introduction to racing, and just kind of kept ramping it up each year and doing events further afield. And did my first gravel race in, I guess it was 2021. And I just, yeah, the more racing I did, the more I just realized I really enjoyed the longer events. And was also racing ski mountaineering in the winter and felt like the longer mountain and gravel events really paired well with that sport. And so yeah, I feel like my first summer really doing a lot of bike racing was 2022. And that's when I did lead boat. So it was Leadville 100 and Steamboat, which are no longer back to back. And a bunch of other races that summer, but I think that was the summer that and that result at Leadboat lined me up for the Lifetime Grand Prix in 2023, which honestly I would call my first season as actually racing at kind of a professional elite level. So quite new to it all, honestly. You've come in with such composure, though.
Oh, thanks for saying. I mean, I have a history of competing in other sports, so I think that helps. I ran track in college, so it's not like competition was completely new, but definitely the gravel scene and the bike racing scene was. So
Yeah,
nice.
that's really cool.
Do you also work outside of racing, or is that the full, are you able to do that the full-time job?
No, I so I part of moving to Aspen was landing this dream job with the company I work for still today, which is the Aspen Institute. So I run the literary arts program, which is called Aspen Words. So we do all sorts of events, about 30 a year for readers and writers, everything from writing conferences to a literary prize, which we're presenting next month in New York City, a few days after Sea Otter.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, I could dump the whole cycling part of this podcast and talk about your job. I am incredibly intrigued by what you do for a living.
Well, it's if you like books and reading,
Yes.
it's the dream job. And it's funny because it's events as well. And so I go to these gravel races and I see what you're doing, Christy, or what other promoters are doing. And I have this like event anxiety for them from putting on. It's like such a different world because you're dealing with
Writers
Yes.
and
Yeah,
artists.
writers. But it's yeah, they have their own different sort of complaints and anxieties and things you have to handle as an organizer. But then I put on this completely different hat as an athlete and go to these bike races, but it's weirdly like the same in some ways. So yeah.
I'm picturing it goes from like denim and beer to like wine and cheese and long flowy skirts. You're like, oops, I packed the wrong thing.
Oh,
Yep.
crap. I got
No,
my
it's
Ritz
accidentally in my New
instead
York
of my.
bag.
Yep. No, I've had to pack for work events and bike races at the same time before in the same suitcase, and it's an interesting mix of apparel.
You
Sorry, my work
seriously, that
clothes are
needs to
kind of
be part of
smelly.
your IG persona. I want to see Carolyn Torrey in a suitcase. Like, what does your life look like as you go, in and out of, because I think maybe part of the reason it's intriguing to me is that there's also so many women that either come from legal, finance, or medical background. And this is like literary and art. And that's something that I re probably relate to a little bit more. And I'm just really intrigued by it. So.
Yeah, that's I actually haven't thought about it that way before, but kind of I do think the more engineering type brain maybe gravitates to the bike world more often, maybe. And then the artist, well, I mean, there's so many creative bike racers too, and you see
Sure,
everything
yeah.
that people put out there, but yeah, it definitely feels like two very different worlds, which is a blessing and a challenge at times. Like I think it's kind of refreshing to be able to be in a world where no one cares about your result at the last race. And that can be actually a good reality check too, of like there's this big wide world out there. And but then it's also really hard when you're trying to balance going to these races and performing at a high level and training and all the things that go into that, and just people just really don't get
They don't get it. They don't
it.
like I just maybe I should just come to those meetings for you and be like, you guys don't understand what an absolute badass Carolyn is, and have some respect for the space that this woman exists in outside of the reading of the books and presenting of the awards. But I mean, I see it like my business partner is into golf, and he doesn't understand the cycling world at all. And so when I'm telling him about these athletes that are coming to Emporia, or that he's like, I'm like, you gotta think like Tiger Woods, or I don't know who else to throw out there in the golf world, but it is weird when you have these completely different spaces that you exist in, and one doesn't know about the other, and vice versa.
Yeah, you kind of feel like you have to be this chameleon, and but I think it's good too,
Yeah.
and to not be too sort of tunnel vision or one dimensional about it. And I do live in a place where people appreciate
Both.
high level sports. Like I'm working with our board and donors, and I think they do appreciate bike, they're asking me about my races and things like that. So I don't want to make it sound like no one's supportive, but it's yeah, it is hard to fully get it if you're not in that world. So
Cycling is supposed to be the new golf, so maybe you need to start taking them like on bike rides for networking things, like to talk about planning and stuff.
Yeah, no, and I actually did that a lot during, especially during the pandemic when we weren't going to restaurants or other places where we would do meetings. I would, and whenever I can, I do suggest a ride or a ski for a meeting instead.
I mean, you live in a beautiful place. It makes so much sense. I'm curious, like, how you balance having that many events and racing at a high level, because I know, like, my company does a lot of events. You know, Christy does a lot of events. Like, you're, at least on my side, a lot of times I'm like, well, there went my health and fitness for 2 weeks while we're leading into that, because it's just so hectic and all consuming. Like, that's the where I'm more like, oh, huh, how do you do that?
Yeah, and that's the, I think that's the hardest part too, because some of those dates are just unmovable. And then obviously when you're in a race series like the Lifetime Grand Prix, those dates are unmovable. So I find it a lot easier to balance training, for instance, because that can be flexible. I can squeeze it in the morning after work, you know, after work, lunch, whatever. But the travel and getting to events is harder when I have my own events for work that I'm juggling, and it means sometimes I can't do a bike race that I really want to do, which is hard. And I think I really had to be laser focused last year on the Lifetime events because I knew that I couldn't try to do, you know, the BWR series or this awesome mountain bike race in Utah that I wanted to do because I needed to save up my time off and kind of my favors that I was calling in from the rest of my team for the races that I was really prioritizing. So I think it that's big is just choosing like what are my goals? Where do I want to put my priorities this year? And you do have to choose. And I definitely had to get better at that over the course of last year because I think I went into it wanting to do more and wanting to say yes to more and then realizing it just wasn't realistic. Not only just traveling, you know, fitting it into the schedule, but also knowing that it takes a lot to recover from some of these super long gravel events, especially. And as much as I thought that going and sitting at my desk and catching up on work after Unbound would be a great way to recover from Unbound, I learned that like even that mental stress is real load on your body that prevents you from recovering as well as you want and need to. So learned a lot about that last year. And yeah, does that answer?
What was it about the Lifetime series? Like, right, there's lots of different other options you could have chosen. You could put your own calendar together, you could race the BWR, but what about the Lifetime series brought you back, even though you have to balance so much to get to all those the number of races?
Yeah, I think it's the depth of the field at those races. And it can be fun too to show up at a smaller event and feel like you have more of a shot maybe at a podium and whatnot. And that feels great in its own way. But I learned that I would actually prefer to show up at a deeper, more competitive race and find that I pull a lot more out of myself in that environment, even if it's fighting for a 10th place or a 15th place, than I would at some of the smaller events. And I do love the smaller events and try to fit them in where I can. But I realized I got so much more jazzed about the dynamics of a race where there's 30 women competing, and that head-to-head racing was just more fun. So, yeah, I think that's why I'm going back for more.
Well, and I think that women's peloton for the Grand Prix is also a pretty special one, which is cool.
Yeah, no, and I got to, I mean, you start to meet more people as I was very new to the scene and feel like I was a little bit of an outsider going in last year, but also I'm excited to go back having more connections both with the other athletes but also in the industry, and you get a lot of that at those events, which as I just as I am so new, it's a good place to be.
Well, you've done something a little different for your spring training. We've seen a lot of the GP athletes posting pictures in Arizona and like all of their different training regimens that they were doing to get ready for this season. But you took a different approach. Tell us about that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been on skis a lot. I'm guessing that it's that, but also, is that what you're asking?
No.
For my recent Girona trip?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you did Girona.
This question could go in two directions.
It is both, but more specifically, the bike journey you've had in Girona, which I thought was pretty cool.
So I got married in September, actually the same weekend as Schwamigan, which is why I didn't do that race. But that was
a good excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was just looking at your wedding photo on your Instagram and I'm like, where the heck is that? Because it is beautiful.
Yeah, it's very close to where we live.
Ski lift one.
We rode a chairlift to our ceremony.
I love it.
Cool. We thought about moving it to Cable, Wisconsin, and making people do a mountain bike race, but we decided to stay here instead.
I think you made a good choice.
No. So anyway, it fell like, you know, in the middle of the end of the season. And so we didn't go on a honeymoon, we decided to go to Girona instead a few weeks ago, which it was a honeymoon, but it was definitely also a training camp, which works well because my husband loves to ride too. So it was awesome. Girona is very hyped and there's so many cyclists there now. So I was wondering if it would actually live up to the hype, and it did for sure. We brought gravel bikes. We also rode a bunch around Barcelona, which was very cool. And I was blown away by how good the access was from such a big city to dirt. But honestly, having for me 2 weeks to ride my bike, I don't think I've taken two full weeks off work in 10 years since I started. So it was this really nice window also into what training more full-time is like, and how just the gains you can make when you can just focus on riding and eating and hanging out and relaxing. And I know that's not the case for professional cyclists because they're juggling all sorts of media and other obligations. So I don't want to pretend that my honeymoon's like what pro cyclists are doing all the time, but it did give me a taste just to what more focused time on the bike without juggling work and people really give you that pass when you're on your honeymoon of like, you don't need to check in, we're not going to bother you. So I got a taste for that, which was also amazing. And I felt like it really kickstarted my training for the season. So it was great.
Yeah. Super fun.
Yeah. Do you end up doing a lot of indoor training then over the winter because of where you live?
I do. And last winter, especially, last winter was the first time I'd ever tried to train on the bike through the winter. And it was a very snowy one in Colorado. So I was on the trainer a lot, but I try to get outside whenever possible. If it gets above, I don't know, 25 degrees, and it's not snowing or raining, I tend to just bundle and go outside. I just don't love that. I do the trainer and it definitely is great for an efficient workout. And sometimes if I can only get on the bike early in the morning or later at night, that's the only option. But the skier in me is okay with being a little bit cold and being in the elements. So
yeah, you're adapted to it.
Yeah.
Oh, she's from Canada.
I'm like,
I'm pretty sure in a past life I was a lizard. So I'm like,
it's not going to be above 55. I don't think I'm going to go out.
I don't like the cold. Yeah. And my threshold is like, it's literally like 60. I'm like, yeah, that's too cold.
Yeah. It kind of becomes this fun challenge. Looking at the weather in Fruta and Moab right now for this weekend, seeing if, you know, it would make sense to go there or it, yeah. And then it makes you appreciate when you are in an environment like going to Girona for that period. It's, you don't have to think about all that stuff, and the training really comes easily.
Yeah. The layering is a 30-minute process of the bike
ride. Then you're like, oh, I have to pee.
Oh, I got to pee. Yeah. No.
You need the drop-off.
Yeah, you got to do the Velocio, man.
I know, but you still have to take off, like, the gloves. Like,
well, the gloves, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, I can never go back to not having the drop waist bibs, for sure.
Ever. Like, they're just...
I was actually telling Ella, Ella's our... does a lot of our stuff on the feisty side, like a lot of our ops, and she didn't know about them because she's a triathlete, so they don't really wear bibs very often. And she's like, what are these? And I was like, have you not heard of drop bibs? And she was like, that sounds amazing, because I've definitely been the person naked on the side of the road before. I was like, oh, we all have.
Yeah, it's way easier to be stealthy with your pee break.
I did take a pee break in the cold one time, and my butt was so cold from the cold that I didn't realize that I didn't get the bibs dropped all the way.
Oh no.
Until I pulled them back up, and I was like, no. Oh shit, now they're wet with piss.
Oh, and cold. That's the worst.
Yeah. But still, yeah, that's on me. I was being impatient. But anywho, I'm so glad I just shared that with our listeners.
It's fine. We've shared lots of other things before.
Yeah, that's sure pee, it's not the first time peeing has been talked about on Girls
It's not. So when you have people like Betsy Welch, who does a whole series on Guess Where I'm Peeing Now, or I'm Peeing Now.
Yeah, her Instagram stories from her pees.
Yeah, from her pee adventures. But anyway, well, I had just a question for you. I mean, because your now husband does also like to go to these events. How much of a difference does that make kind of in your scheduling and in going to the events, like having a partner that does this alongside?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel lucky because with my full-time job and bike racing, if he wasn't into the bike racing, I honestly don't know when we'd see each other, or because we can train together, which mostly just happens on the weekends just for scheduling reasons. But going to these events too, it's, you know, 10, 12 weekends a summer. So if he wasn't enjoying going and racing some of them himself, then I don't know when we'd hang out. and it is nice to have someone. He raced professionally as a triathlete 15 years ago. But he can still really relate to just what goes into being an athlete and preparing for a race. And so it's nice to be able to relate on that level. I will say it's tough with, and I know this is changing to some degree with the Lifetime events, but having a partner who's in the field, especially when they're intermixed, men and women, like, I've worried about ending up in a group with him and and that has happened at some races, none of the Lifetime races last season. So I didn't have to sort of stress about that, but I just know that's a dynamic that's really difficult, and that, you know, people might question, are they working together? Is he helping her? And so I was a little stressed about that happening and what that would mean. And it's funny because he has ended up in groups ahead of me with other women where he's definitely, you know, taking big pulls for the women who want to beat me.
You're like, wait a minute.
Give him a hard time.
Am I beating my wife? Like,
I'm like, yeah, you are helping my competitors right now. But in some ways that feels less fraught than him being in my group and then stressing out. But yeah, so that's something that goes into it. But he actually, I think the one race last year where he did not race and supported me was Unbound, which was honestly really special. Like, I didn't realize how much emotionally that helps you, just to see someone that's not that you love supporting you out there. It's different than a crew or a sponsor, even though big appreciation for those people too, but it's different than a loved one that's out there cheering for you. So that was pretty special.
Yeah. I want to ask your opinion on
Rook's article today.
Oh, I haven't read that yet, but it's interesting because my first thought was like, once again, we're worried about how this works for the pros and we're not thinking about, I haven't read it, so I don't know, but I'm like, those support crews, those checkpoint towns are another piece of the community of the race. And I love the fact, like what you just said, Carolyn, of going into a checkpoint and somebody that's been there helping you through your training and, you know, like all of those things, like being there for you. I just think it's really, I think it's a special part of gravel cycling, and it encourages, not only does it encourage building community, but I also think we've probably seen part of the reason we've seen the growth of gravel cycling grow so much is because people there that are acting in those support networks catch the bug themselves and want to try race. Like they want to try that. They want to try being on the bike. And I love that aspect of it. And I know what I get kind of some of the finer points that she's talking about, but the bottom line is like, I would never want to take support crews and checkpoints away from at least not the masses. Like, I think it's so special. That's, you know, anyway.
Yeah. I haven't read the article yet, so I'm not.
I haven't read it. I saw the headline and I saw somebody post about it. I was like, I don't even want to read that right now. Cause I'm just like, stop coming in at like, just thinking about the pros and think about like, you know, the average athlete that's out there doing this. Like,
yeah, I will say one challenge though, that comes from having a partner who's racing sometimes is that he isn't available to be support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's something that I see a lot of at the races is people's significant others being there, you know, doing their bottle feeds and whatnot. And like, I'm getting ready to go to Sea Otter in April and he's actually doing a ski mountaineering race in Europe. So I'm going to be traveling there solo. And it is kind of stressful, even at this level, mm-hmm. to figure out that support. Like I'm going to need 3 different bottle feeds. And a lot of the time that, and it's really special when you can have family or help you out with that. But there's definitely a lot of people traveling to these races that don't have that. And then there is a real competitive disadvantage if you don't have that on course support. You know, if you have to stop and fill up your water, you're going to lose the group. And so I haven't read the article, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
I've only glanced at the article, but Rook did message me last night because we were talking back and forth about something else, and I think like she was referring more to like the very pit stop crew types of the like mm-hmm. the pros get, which I will say, you know, like if we're talking about things like drafting, like we're going into those conversations, well, if it just plays into like the better support you have. So the athletes have the bigger brands and the more support behind them are going to have better support at those stops to get them mm-hmm. in and out in 1 minute, where if you have to pick up your own food, clean off your own bike, right? Like you don't have that same level of support. It does create an uneven playing field as far as like pure racing, because it's like, well, who has the, it basically is like,
I know,
who has the
I
most
just,
money?
I think you just start down that rabbit hole. And to me, it's just like, well, okay. So, I mean, you start throwing in trains and like it's, you're looking for this, I don't want to say pureness because I don't think that's the right word, but you're looking for this controlled environment that doesn't really exist. And
right. But I don't,
and
think
it's
like,
just weird to me because I'm also just like, where do we start saying, okay, that's enough, you know?
Well, I think that's the question, right? But
a
train is not there. There is that piece, right? Like you can't control mm-hmm. the train, but if your brand is like supporting you at $100,000 and somebody else's brand is giving them a free bike, like who's going to get the better
the $100,000. That's yeah. That that's
you know the who's going to have the advantage in the race.
Yeah,
based but that's on...
yeah, yeah, yeah. I do see the like the rabbit hole too, and I think I actually spent too much time last season stressing about like what other support other people had that I didn't have,
yeah.
And if I was going to be underprepared because I had this full-time job. And I just think I learned that it's useless to compare and stress and think about what other people have that you don't have or what I have that other people don't have, and just focus on what you can control, have the best preparation that you can have the best support that you can have, whether that's, you know, no one or the best pit crew ever, and just do the best that you can with what you have. And I don't know, I definitely stressed about that last year, and I'm kind of, it just becomes a waste of energy, I think.
I was going to say, oh, yeah. that to me would be the key there, is like you have to, well, it's racing, you have to control the controllables. I mean, just because you have the best pit crew doesn't mean you're not going to rip your chain off or have eight flats or, you know, like all of the other things that come along with racing bikes, on a controlled course or not. But I've been on some of these discussions, and that's, I see that kind of conversation start coming up about what's fair. And I'm like, so there's a part of me that thinks the fewer the rules, the more fair, because you have to like exist within like the, like, I know that sounds weird, but like you start doing these rules and then people start looking for how to take advantage or how to, you know, how to walk right up to the edge of the rule before they break it. And I'm just like, this is just, it's just, it gets to be this like vicious circle. And I'm not, there's a lot of answers out there that, you know, I don't, and I do, I'm definitely coming at it from a much more simplistic perspective. I get that.
Yeah. Well, and there's enough events and options now where you kind of vote with where you show up. Like if you want to do an event where there's no on-course support at all, so it's entirely equal for everyone, like go do SBT. I think it's like that still.
Well, SBT has support everywhere, like equal support everywhere.
Right, but you can't have a crew, yeah, like a pits
right
out there. Or yeah. I don't know. I think there's enough events to pick and choose where if it's really important to you that it's X type of environment, then you choose the environment.
That's where I think we need to focus at, like Carolyn, honestly, is like, instead of trying to make this uniform guideline, is like, let gravel be that. Like, it's, I think that's the cool thing, is like, you know, Bobby Wintle's race, he's not planning on separate starts. So if you're a pro woman and you want a separate start, you can't go to Bobby and demand a separate start. Like, that's not his jam. So it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
It's whether you, whatever you want to think about it, that's fine. But the flip side of it is like, that's also the race he's running, and those are the rules, or no lack of rules, mass start, whatever. But that's really not what my question was going to be.
I know. I was like, I can't believe we got into gravel beef. I never thought we'd end up here.
Catherine, that's you. I wanted to know.
I like stirring things up.
I know you do. And it drives me nuts. I also love you, but it drives me nuts.
Hey, all, it's your editor, Lindsay, here. I want you to get ready to ante up for the Ultimate Gravel Challenge this summer. Join us at the 2024 Trans Rockies Gravel Royale, where adventure awaits in the breathtaking Canadian Rockies. Experience the thrill of a unique 3-day stage race surrounded by stunning scenery on secluded gravel roads in the British Columbia backcountry. With two distance options, the full pint or half pint distances, there's a challenge for every level of rider. And forget about logistics, Trans Rockies has you covered. Fully supported with tents, meals, aid stations, technical support, and even massage services, so all you have to do is focus on the ride. You'll stay at the picturesque Nipica Mountain Resort, nestled in the heart of the Rockies, and celebrate your achievements with daily podium awards, group dinner, and custom designed memorabilia. After the ride, you can unwind at Chillville with cold refreshments, music, games, and camaraderie with your fellow riders. Don't miss out on this epic adventure. Register now at transrockiesgravelroyale.com and use the code GGG24GR100 to save $100 off your entry.
The link and discount codes will be in the show notes of this episode. Embrace the challenge, conquer the gravel, and create memories that will last a lifetime. So go all in with us for Trans Rockies Gravel Royale this August.
Well, because one of my tricks for training is because I do like to read. I love reading a book, like paper. Like, I don't like ebooks. No offense. I just prefer the book that you open up and you hold, and it's very tactile. But the other thing I love to do is when I'm doing big training blocks, I personally love to have an audiobook that I only listen to when I'm running or riding, because it's like, it's a motivator. Like, I've even spent an extra hour on the bike because I haven't wanted to end where I'm at in the audiobooks. I'm like, I just have to keep riding because I don't want to wait till tomorrow. So I'm going to keep riding until they get through like the next two chapters or whatever. Somebody that's in books and in literature like that, what is your take on audiobooks? Do those count? Because I really want them to count as reading.
I totally think they count. And I just wish I liked audiobooks more, because the amount of time I'm spending on the bike and the amount of reading I need to do, it would be so much easier. And maybe it's because I see the bike as a break from that world. And if I'm listening to books while it just is blending and not giving me the space that I am looking to get from work through the bike. But it's more just, I space out. Like, I feel like my mind goes into kind of the flow state thing. And if I'm focusing on a book, it's funny though, because I do listen to this podcast or other podcasts.
You can space out on our podcast.
You can space out on a podcast and it's okay. Whereas a novel, if you space out, you've missed like a key moment in the story and then you're totally lost.
Right.
And that's
when I'm needing that kind of a bike ride, I'm listening to a podcast. Because it's like, if it keeps me entertained, that's great. But if I lose sight of it, it's like, you can kind of come back into it. But books are,
I like a bad murder mystery book. Like, you know, the ones that you're like, I know how this is going to go, because they all flow the same way, but you can kind of be listening to it. And if you space out for a while, you're like, oh, I already figured out it's the first chapter who did it anyway. So like, I just spaced out on like something dumb. Like that's like kind of like those dumb books that you're like embarrassed to admit to read.
Yeah, that's a good rec. I do think memoirs that are read by the author.
Oh yeah, those are good.
Can be good because there's less of a plot with a memoir, especially if it's someone whose life story you're familiar with. And
I listened to Shoe Dog recently writing, and I was like, oh, this is a great writing book. It's Bill Knight's story. It was an easy listen, but just kind of going in and out of his life. So
I think it's turning into a movie soon, maybe.
Oh, he's a real interesting guy. He was my favorite part of the whole, well, I won't ruin it in case somebody's just dying.
No spoilers.
He was like talking about like all the hard, I'm going to say it anyway. So if you're like just really wanting to read the book, but he's like talking about like all these hard things in his employees' lives. He's like, so-and-so, and they were paralyzed, and you know, like this person, and like, they were like, never got a promotion at work because they were obese and blah, blah, blah. Like this, all this horrible stuff. And I got cut from the high school baseball team. We all had tragedy. I was like, your version of tragedy is so different.
That's amazing.
People. Anyway, it's a very compelling story though. Like, it's fascinating how that company got started. So since you're in this world, I know we have a lot of people that love to read. Are there any authors that you're like, oh, you should be checking this author out? Or this is like a really...
Yeah. It's so funny because I feel like people ask me this question and my mind just goes blank, which is so funny. Like, what's your favorite book is actually the hardest question ever. But I just recently read a memoir called How to Say Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
By Safia Sinclair, who's a Jamaican poet. And this is her memoir, and it tells kind of her story of growing up in Jamaica under a very controlling Rastafarian father and kind of breaking free of that, becoming a poet and author. And it's just a beautiful book because she's a poet, but also just an amazing story of kind of breaking free cool. of a really difficult family situation, and very inspiring, very different than bikes. I do read a lot of sports books too, which like I just read Running with the Buffaloes, which is about the CU cross-country team winning a national, or I don't want to give that away either, but yeah, going kind of competing for a national championship. And those, I don't know, I actually read that while I was in Girona. It's fun to read inspiring sports stories. Mm-hmm. I think when you're in the middle of a hard training block because it just kind of is extra
motivating. Books are the best. I just I wish I just had more time to just, yeah.
Yeah, it really is like the only way that we have to escape or be in a different place or be in someone else's life. Like I can't think of another way that you can do that.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah. And it's so different than like watching TV or something. Like I can just like get
sucked in. Watching TV is, I do it, but it's terrible for me because I always multitask when I'm watching TV.
Yeah. There's same. I'm like doing always, five other things.
It's ridiculous. I hate it. I'm like, what? I've got like six screens going here. You know, it's like usually a piece of paper, writing down notes over here, checking email, looking on my phone, watching TV. And I'm like, God, this is awful. not the multitasking I want to be doing. But anyway,
the only TV I really do now is watching road racing, which is really addictive and can go on for a lot of hours.
That's awesome. Well, go ahead, Catherine. Sorry.
Nope, you go ahead.
No, I was just like, we have been talking for a while.
I know. I was going to do the same thing.
Okay. Well, just really where people can find you. And then, you know, yeah, I think that does it, right?
Yeah. Will you be at Sea Otter? We'll be seeing you there.
Yes, I will see you there. My Instagram is ctori1. I'm a little inconsistent sometimes with my posting, but I'll try to be better. If you want book recs, I sometimes put those up there too. and yeah, that's kind of it, basically. Oh, Strava too, I guess. I post all my workouts, all my rides. So it's just my name, Carolyn Torrey.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Carolyn.
Thank you both. And thanks for doing this podcast. I love listening to all your interviews. So
thank you.
Thanks.
You have been listening to the Girls Gone Gravel podcast. This podcast is edited and produced by the team at Live Feisty Media. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating. It really helps other women find the podcast. And be sure to follow us at Girls Gone Gravel on Instagram or Facebook.